This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at chrisducker.com/Rainmaker.
This is Youpreneur FM, the official podcast of the Youpreneur Mastermind Community. A place where no entrepreneur gets left behind in their pursuit of building a business they can be proud of.
And now,
here's your host, serial entrepreneur and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
So, Chris, welcome back to the show.
Awesome, Chris. Thanks so much for having me back.
It's great. I'm going to say this is your third time on the show. I'm going to take a punt.
Maybe 10, 15. I don't know. I lose count every week. No, it's great. Yeah. It's a huge honor. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming back. I very much appreciate it. I know that you're, and obviously this will be going a little, going live a little later than, you know, when we actually record, as we always batch. But you are just about to kick off a pretty heavy, 30 cities around?
That's correct.
Is it the U.S.? The U.S. only?
It's mostly North America in the beginning. I'm doing 30 cities. Okay. But then, of course, you know, I have a global community just like you do. Yeah. So, after that, I'll definitely be going elsewhere around the world.
I love it. Okay. So the new book, Born for This, I think everybody that listens to this show truly, and I don't just say this because you're on the recording right now, but I genuinely believe everybody that listens to Youpreneur FM needs to pick up this, because I think this is something that is, it's ingrained in us and we must let it out. We must find it, first of all. We must let it out. We must let the world know how we can help them, how we can serve them. And this book, I think, is going to change a lot of lives, just as did the $100 startup as well.
Well, thank you very much. You can edit out your kind words later, but thank you.
All right, look, let's get stuck in. You were very kind to give me a uncorrected advance copy. It only arrived a few days ago because I live all the way in the Philippines. So what I've done is actually gone through the book, and I've picked out two chapters here that I think this audience of mine is really going to eat up, because, and not to say that the other, whatever, how many chapters we got, 13, 14 chapters are not
like
worthy of their eyeballs. But I mean, these two chapters for me, based on how I like to converse with my audience, really stood out to me. One of them is called You Incorporated, which I think was just way too much of a coincidence. And then the other one was chapter 11, DIY Rockstar. And the objective of this particular chapter is to recruit a small army of fans and supporters. I like this as well. So before we get into really deep diving into those two particular chapters, give us the premise of the book here. What is it all about, and why this book now after everything else that you've done?
Yeah, so the subtitle of the book is How to Find the Work You Were Meant to Do. And it kind of extends on this theme of Born for This. And as I mentioned, like, I have this great community, you have a great community. And lots of people, you know, in that community describe themselves as having found their dream job. They've either found their dream job somehow within an organization or a community, or in particular, for many people that you and I know, they've actually created their dream job, you know, through entrepreneurship, through freelancing, consulting, maybe some kind of hybrid career. Lots of people are doing things, you know, where they kind of work for someone else for a time, they work on their own for a time. And I was really interested in this concept of how does one find or create their dream job? A lot of people use the same kind of language of having won the career lottery. They say things like, you know, I feel so fortunate to do this work and I would do it for free, but, you know, thankfully I don't have to. I get lost in my work.
So, but I like to make money.
Right. And that's great too. Right. Exactly. But so somehow they found this convergence point between this model that I used, you know, throughout the book and these two chapters and elsewhere. And this model is joy, money, and flow. You know, how do you do something that you love that is financially viable and rewarding and sustainable, and also something that you're really good at? And it's interesting because I think if you look at people who are really successful, they actually do find something that includes all three of these areas. And it's totally possible to, you know, make a lot of money and not really care what you're doing and use that for something else that you care about. It's also possible to make a lot of money at something that you're only, you know, somewhat good at. But again, really successful people, I think the goal, you know, of what we're seeking is the intersection of all these things, right? Joy, money, and flow. So the way the book came about is essentially trying to decode these lessons, to look at these successful people, who are, you know, just ordinary average people who have kind of followed a path and made certain choices along the way. It didn't just happen randomly to them. They made active choices. Sure. How did they find the work they were meant to do? And then how can the reader do that too? And, you know, what I try to do in my books, just like you did in yours, which was also very practical and prescriptive, I don't want to just describe a phenomenon. I don't want to just say, like, here's what other people have done. I want to then hopefully go to the next level of saying, okay, here's what this person did. And, you know, you, the reader, the listener, you know, you're not that person, but how can you apply this in your own way? And how can you know, take this lesson and this tidbit or this tip or this hack or this strategy or whatever it is? And, you know, if you don't like one page of the book, hopefully you turn the page and you find something else you can apply. So basically the goal is help people find or create that dream job to find that thing you were born to do.
I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I mean, it's the perfect, do you feel like, I don't know whether this is kind of like, is this the twin of $100 startup, or is it the big brother? Is it the little sister? Where does that go? It's kind of relative, right?
No, it's great. It is definitely a relative. It's in the family. I'll have to think about whether it's the twin or the big or the little brother or sister. I think I've kind of learned a little bit since $100 startup because, you know, I have a bias toward entrepreneurship and I love entrepreneurship. And I think what I've learned though is maybe not everyone wants to be a full-time entrepreneur. However, you know, everyone can think entrepreneurially. You know, and everyone can apply entrepreneurial skills, even if they're working for someone else, because ultimately, like I say in another chapter of the book, like everyone is self-employed. You know, even if you work in an organization or a company, you are essentially responsible, you know, in the long run. Nobody else is going to care about your career as much as you do, right? So I think, you know, I've kind of evolved and you know, I'm definitely still talking about entrepreneurship, and the You Inc. chapter in particular is about entrepreneurship. But you know, there's more than one way to succeed. You know, I look at successful people from different backgrounds. There's a woman I interviewed who was the first female firefighter in Mississauga, Ontario, about 20 years ago. And it was her dream or aspiration to be a firefighter. And so she had to, you know, go through all these challenges and process to make that happen. And the thing about being a firefighter is obviously you can't be a freelance firefighter. You know, you can't be an entrepreneur fire. Like you have to be part of a team, an organization. And so she found the work she was born to do that way. So maybe that's the kind of shift or evolution I've gone through.
I love it. Well, look, let's dive then. I want to kind of like deep dive as much as we can here on these two chapters that I think really stood out. One really focusing on entrepreneurship and building, quote unquote, a small empire. And then we'll wrap up sort of looking into the importance of a tribe, of a community, of an army of fans, and particularly for those obviously doing business online. And you've got one of the most passionate communities that I have ever come across in the history of my travels. I mean, they speak about you like, you know, you have gold dust floating behind you. As you walk down the street, they absolutely love you. And I want to get into that as well. What that means to you and your brand and what you're all about too. But let's get into building a small empire.
Okay.
You know, I mean, for me, the majority of my entrepreneurship journey has always been, I've always been looking bigger. You know, I'm at this point now where I've got 460 odd people working for me, three different businesses, lots of management, all the rest of it. And I love it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But when I say to myself, you know, build a small empire, why keep it small? Why not go big?
Sure, of course. You know, I mean, it's a great question. I guess, you know, for me, I can only speak from and write from my own experience, right? And I don't have 400 employees.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, for me, the primary value has always been freedom and independence. And I think it's totally possible to have freedom and independence and have 400 employees. I mean, you're probably the poster child, you know, for that. But I guess in all the you know, the entrepreneurs that I've known and I've worked with, I tend to gravitate toward people who are more solopreneurs or maybe building more of that small empire. When I say small empire, it can still be quite substantial. I mean, it can still
be a
multi-six-figure income or a seven-figure income or whatever the number is. I mean, the number doesn't really matter. I guess I've just always been focused on, you know, stories and case studies and teachings of people that are more individual based as opposed to like organization or team based, just from my own experience.
Yeah, no, I hear you loud and clear. And I'm glad you point out the fact that, you know, small doesn't mean minuscule.
Right,
it just means, you know, manageable, lifestyle focused, et cetera, et cetera. I get it.
Small doesn't mean minimum wage, you know.
Well, no, absolutely not. So break this, break this down. Let's go through the chapter a little bit. I know you mentioned my buddy Benny Hsu there as well.
Right, that's right.
And let tell his story. I think it'd be really nice for everybody to understand what he went through.
Yeah.
And you talk about it in the book, obviously.
Sure. Yeah. Benny's got a great story. He's from Jacksonville, Florida, and he had always kind of dabbled in entrepreneurship. He's one of those people who's kind of, he's tried different things and he was very curious. I mean, curiosity, I think, is a very successful or a very common trait among successful entrepreneurs, you know, regardless of how they're trying to scale their business. And so he'd done a few different things. And his goal at some point was to design t-shirts. And, you know, at first he wanted to actually like screen print the t-shirts and all of that, but there's a whole lot of process for that and it's expensive and there's risk involved and you don't know if your designs are going to sell. And so through this like long process of trial and error, he created this business to where he designs t-shirts. He doesn't actually maintain any inventory. Everything is printed on demand. And in his case, what's even more interesting is he actually hasn't followed the pathway that we'll talk about next of the small army. He's actually gone directly through Facebook ads, reaching people who are entirely unknown to him for the most part, and just kind of hacked his way forward to create this winning formula. To where he now has this six-figure income designing t-shirts, and he has the freedom and he has the independence, but it's also very reliable and consistent because he has so many different designs. So I think maybe one key point is, you know, the chapter before this chapter is called Side Hustle, and it's all about, you know, helping employees, you know, create some kind of income earning project on the side, you know, even as they work their job. And for some people, that goal is to quit their job and do it full time. That's what Benny did. For other people, they're happy in their job, but, you know, this side hustle gives them greater confidence. It gives them greater security. It's not just the money that's coming in. That's great. But it's also like, you know, more possibility and opportunity. So what Benny did essentially was he took the side hustle and he ended up, you know, going full time into it and creating, you know, the t-shirt empire, which is a very funny empire because it's an empire in which he stocks no inventory. You know, his empire is essentially his MacBook or, you know, his PC, whatever he uses. That is his, you know, that's all the equipment he needs to do the work he does and earn this good income.
And I mean, I've known Benny for a while, like a good 5-6 years. Mm. And so, you know, I've seen him when he was sort of doing his thing before and he was trying lots of things and, you know, he was blogging and all this sort of stuff. And then I saw him after the whole t-shirt thing blew up.
Right.
And he looked very happy.
That's great.
He looked incredibly happier than he did before. And his beautiful wife, and they travel all the time and everything. I think it's great. He's done a really good job.
Yeah.
So, I mean, where does this come in? I mean, a lot of people that listen into this show, Chris, are, you know, coaches, consultants, speakers, authors, bloggers, experts, that kind of mob.
Yeah.
Where does this come then for these guys? Now, people that are ultimately building the business around them and their expertise.
Sure. Well, I think there's two good points. I mean, and you kind of led into it when you said, Benny was blogging. He was doing this. He was doing that. He tried some other stuff that didn't work. I think we often kind of point to persistence, you know, along with curiosity, as mentioned earlier, as being one of these key traits of successful entrepreneurs. And it is true in the sense that, you know, Benny was successful because he was persistent. But I think that maybe the more interesting point is he was persistent and he kept trying different things. And some of the early things didn't work out. And he was actually kind of willing to, you know, say goodbye to those things. So the lesson we often give people is like, just never give up, you know, just keep going and keep going. But sometimes, you know, what you're doing is not going to work. And so, you know, I think the successful entrepreneurs that I see in particular are willing to make a shift and they're willing to close something down. You know, I talked to Brian Clark earlier today. I know he's a friend of yours as well, I believe, the copy blogger. And, you know, on his website, he says he's founded 8 successful businesses. And I said, were there any other businesses? You know, and he said he's actually founded 9 businesses, you know, and one of them failed, which, first of all, is a pretty great, you know, success rate.
Pretty good ratio. I'll take that.
That's the first thing. But maybe the point I was coming to is, you know, the 9th business, you know, the one that failed, you know, if that was his first business, what if he had just stuck with it? You know, what if he had just like, oh, I have to be persistent. I have to find it, you know, a way to make it work. But obviously that business wasn't going to work. And he said farewell to it. And then look at what's happened next. He's built a major empire of all this kind of stuff. So whether it's a copy blogger empire, a Chris Ducker empire, or a Benny Hsu, you know, small business lifestyle kind of thing, the willingness to experiment, the willingness to say goodbye to something and to try something else and to continue to refine it is so critical in building that U Inc.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. And I'm curious to know, actually, from your experience, have you said goodbye to anything business-wise before?
I've said
what hasn't worked for you?
Well, I mean, all the things that haven't worked, you've never heard of. That's the thing, right?
Exactly.
Right? I mean, that's the nature of something that hasn't worked. You know, it's like if the tree falls in the forest, does anyone hear it? If the product is launched and no one buys, you know, does it exist, right? So, I've made a lot of shifts. I mean, before I was blogging, I created information products and I dabbled in lots of different things. And, you know, at one point I had this what I thought was a great idea of selling golf memberships. And I had this idea of selling them for $1, you know, $1 a membership or something. And there was no upsell. There was no back end, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think at the point, someone said to me, Chris, how are you really going to build a business on $1 a customer? And I didn't have a good answer. You know, I just thought like, well, it's just $1. And if you look at, you know, the millions of people who play golf, all I need is this certain percentage, you know, of them, you know, to purchase, which is obviously a terrible way to approach market testing and analysis.
Yes.
And I mean, this is just one example. So basically, like, I had put a lot of work into building a website for a product that was never going to sell, you know, or never be profitable in any way. But many, many, many things like that, for sure.
Well, I think, you know, anybody that I speak to in the business world, and I always ask them, you know, what hasn't worked out for you? Mm-hmm. What have you kissed goodbye? What have you closed the door on? It's happened to me two or three massive failures, like horrible failures, because I definitely validate my ideas. There's no doubt about it, but I don't like to over-validate or procrastinate. So I pull the trigger quite fast on business ideas when they come to me. And I've let myself down several times. I mean, to the tune of, a dollar amount, I've probably sunk 60, 70 grand into three different things over the last, you know, 7-8 years that haven't done well. Uh-huh. But obviously, I mean, you bounce back, you recover, then you find your groove, and then you start kind of really putting your foot down on the gas. So let's talk about that. I'd love to know about your groove, actually. When did you find your groove with everything that you were doing in regards to, you know, the unconventional guides and all the rest of it?
Sure. I think in terms of like strict business, you know, stuff, I think I'm still finding my groove. I think in terms of the community building and the writing, you know, that's kind of what I tend to focus on. Other people have done much, much better than me in terms of the business building, you know, and you're a great example. I often mention you in that regard. But for the community building and the writing, you know, I had dabbled in it as well, just like Benny did for a while. But at a certain point, I was like, okay, I want to really focus on this. You know, I actually want to write books. I want to write books for the sake of writing books. Like, I'm not trying to like use this as a back end funnel for something else. Like, I actually, you know, believe in that medium, and that's what I want to do. So once I started, I kind of took it serious, you know, right from the beginning, and tried to study, you know, what other successful people had done, and try to decode the process and to speak with an original voice as much as possible, you know, even though in the beginning, of course, it's rarely original, it's rarely unique, it's always derivative, but you keep going, you know, you keep trying. So
you do.
Yeah, that's it. You keep trying, and then you put things out, and some things work and some things don't. And you talk about the failures, about the big things you failed. But the other key point is, as you said, you're careful with risk. You're happy to just say yes once the initial validation is done. Think about all the successful projects, you know, that you might have actually not moved forward in, you know, had you been risk adverse and, you know, waited for the 100% odds or whatever that are never going to come.
Right. Exactly. No, you're absolutely right. And that's one of the reasons why I moved fast. And I always suggest other people do as well. I'm curious to know as well. And in this particular chapter, you incorporate it. You talk about passion a little bit in here, and you talk about one particular, I believe, an American football player. Am I right?
No, I believe you're talking about. I believe she's actually Filipino American. The passion.
Oh, and this is Trinidad, right?
Yeah,
Trinidad.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, how important is, or how do we balance off the whole passion profit mindset?
Sure,
like, because I'm always a big believer that you shouldn't go into anything based entirely on passion.
Of course not.
Right?
Yeah.
It's good to be passionate, but you've got to have that, what I call that primary profit, you know, mindset or mentality. How can we sort of start breaking those down a little bit where one doesn't sort of start swallowing up the other?
Sure. Yeah, of course. Well, I try to be careful about the word passion just because, you know, it has so many different inferences to it. And there's the follow your passion thing. And, you know, I'm more interested in kind of following your joy or following your skill even. I think we tend to find what we're passionate about as we do things that we're good at and things that we enjoy. And if we do that, we tend to also get closer to something that is more entrepreneurially viable. And so that's kind of what I'm interested in. It's not just, you know, your passion, like what do you like to do, that kind of thing. That's fine to think about, but it's kind of basic. I mean, I'm more interested in, in, you know, how can we create something that is not only meaningful to us, but also to others? And it is something that we enjoy. Of course, we want to enjoy like our work. Our life is short. So why would we not? And we're going to be more successful and make more money if we are doing something that we love. So I think her story, so she created a product called the Passion Planner. I think that's where the word passion came from. She was an art student, at UCLA, former med student, and kind of switched and was just trying to find her way like everybody else was. And she created a journal, a type of planner that hadn't been done before, that was very artistic and creative, but also very supportive of productivity. And she did a Kickstarter. It went really, really well. Then she did a second Kickstarter, which was even more phenomenal. And I think her third Kickstarter was, I don't know, $500,000 or even more than that. I mean, and she was just a college student. So I kind of traced, you know, the story of how she did that and how she continued to refine her product. And it was built around something that she was passionate about, but it was far more than just her. It was like, there was a demand for this. There was a market need. And there was a validation, you know, of that need. And the validation didn't come through a spreadsheet analysis or AdWords testing or something. The validation came through thousands of people, you know, raising their hand and putting down their money before this thing was even produced. And, you know, now it's a full-time business. I think she told me recently she has 14 employees. I mean, she's 22, 23 years old, you know, so her future is bright, I think.
Great. I love it. Now, I mean, you mentioned also in the fact that she was in pre-med studies for UCLA. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about university,
sure.
Right? Let's talk about college a little bit here in this kind of a whole business growth or building mentality of it, because I think a lot of the time it gets swept under the carpet to a certain degree. And I think everyone's got their own opinion on this, but I don't think a lot of people talk about it all that much. I'm quite happy to talk about it, but
sure.
I'm curious to know your end on this. Do you believe that studying business per se at university is like a prerequisite to success as an entrepreneur?
Okay. Well, I like the specificity of the question, because, you know, when you begin with saying like, what's your opinion on education? It's like, well, it's totally contextual. It depends on each person, your needs,
right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But, you know, when you start breaking it down that much, you know, do I believe that studying business at a university is a prerequisite for success? Well, absolutely not. You know, like right. The more variables you add there, like, of course not. Like, we can think of so many people who've been extremely successful, you know, by dropping out of college or university or never going in the first place. I mean, there's so many entrepreneurial legends, you know, who fit in that category. And then probably also a lot of people that we know, you know. And so then maybe it's good to like, so let's back it up a little bit. Is it a prerequisite? Of course not. Can it be valuable? Probably for some people, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think there is a change. Like, we all love to kind of rail against, you know, traditional systems. I mean, I love to do that myself. I mean, I travel quite a bit. I think there is an increasing awareness, at least in some of the curriculums, you know, of entrepreneurialism and the need for experimentation and teaching skills that are actually, you know, applied in the real world. So I think it's getting better. I think in some ways it can be helpful, but also you can learn a lot on your own. You can learn by listening to these podcasts. You know, you can read books. You can go to the library and get books, you know. You can get a website for free these days, basically, or $5 a month or whatever the cost is. So, you know, I think there are lots of different ways to learn, of course.
There is, indeed. And I mean, you know, my daughter's about to begin university back in London. And, you know, she's studying marketing and advertising. And then she was like, do I really need to go, Dad? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you dropped. And you know, that old chatter, you dropped out. You know,
you dropped out halfway through.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so
all you do is run a business with 400 employees, you know?
Yeah. Imagine what could have happened if you stayed in.
That's funny.
And got the degree, right?
You'd be one of those employees. That's what would happen, right?
I mean, there you go. You're probably right. But I mean, like, you know, when she said that to me, though, do I really need to go? I said, it's not a matter of needing, it's a matter of wanting. Like, do you feel like it'll benefit you?
Right.
Do you feel like it'll set you up better for life? And if you do, then I'll back you up 100% on that. If you don't, I'll back you up on that as well, because I can't be the idiot that says you must go to university because I dropped out.
Of course. You know, but maybe she's seeing the value in other ways. Maybe she's seeing her peers going. Maybe she's thinking about not just like learning specific skills, but the whole experience. And so that's like a different, different conversation. And that's a different kind of value. And,
indeed.
You know, what I'm more against is like the graduate degrees, like the graduate degree, MBA degree, law degrees in particular in the United States. I mean, thankfully the numbers have dropped off quite a bit, But, you know, even just a few years ago, there was something like 40,000, you know, lawyers are graduating every year in the United States, and there are no law firms taking them, you know, and they're all graduating with huge amounts of debt because there's no scholarship, you know, for business school at the graduate level or for law school at the graduate level. So that to me is far more problematic. That's like, you know, if people ask me like, what's your general opinion on education? I'm like, well, you do what's best for you. If they ask about the MBA, I'm like, you better be sure it's best for you. Because, right, you know, if you're an HR executive, you know, and if you get this graduate degree, you'll get a raise of a certain percentage. Maybe that's good. But otherwise, forget it.
Yeah, not here. Good stuff. All right. Let's deep dive into fans and communities and followers. Man, there's so many different rabbit holes we could go down with this with you particularly. When did you realize, I want to ask this question probably quite selfishly.
Sure.
When did you realize that you had a genuine tribe? Mm-hmm. Like, when was that catalyst moment? And how did it make you feel? What did you do after sort of realizing?
I had had the blog for just a few months, and I went to New York City. I met Jonathan Fields, who's been a great friend ever since. This was 8 years ago.
And love Jonathan.
Yeah. He's such an amazing guy. And we did a meetup together. And, you know, I don't want to say like hundreds of people came, because it wasn't hundreds, but it was something like 40 or 50 people that came. And I was expecting like 5 to 10. And all these people came out to this meetup. And it's not just that there were a lot of people, they were amazing people. They were like people who had all these great stories, and they were talking about traveling the world, and they were talking about quitting their job to start a business and trying to find their way, and then working out education and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, like there is something here that is so powerful. And I don't really know what to do with it. I don't really know like how to tap it. And it's not about me ultimately. But there is something here that's really, really interesting. So that moment was kind of a key point.
So you go away from that meetup, you know, the euphoria dies down maybe a little bit.
Sure.
What do you do next? What's your next move after
that? Yeah, sure. I mean, there was some euphoria. I remember like staying up that night thinking like, this is just incredible. What do we do? You know, I guess I just tried to keep doing what I was doing at that point, which was like writing and posting regular articles, also being available to help people however I could. And then slowly, very slowly and kind of deliberately building the business around it. So maybe the business moment when I kind of knew that there was some potential was the first product launch that I did associated with the blog, because I had built information products before in the past, as I mentioned, but this felt very different. This felt very personal. And so, you know, I almost tried to fail in launching the first product. It was the ultimate soft sell. You know, it was please don't buy this unless you really, really, really need it. You know, there was zero, it was like less than zero marketing that went into it. It sold like $1,000 worth, you know, on the first day. And I mean, $1,000 is not a huge amount of money, but for me, I was like, there's so much potential here. I could do so much, you know. And I created another product maybe 2 months later. And that time I actually did put a little bit more effort into it and, you know, did have like two versions of the product and just a tiny, tiny bit more marketing. And that was like $4,000 to $5,000, you know, on the first day. And I'm like, great, you know, like, wow. I mean, like, it's just a question of what I want to do with it, where I want to take it, because there is real power here.
Yeah, I mean, when you were on the show last time, I asked you about, you know, how you make your money, because, you know, you travel the world so frequently, and you're still doing it.
Sure.
You know, it's crazy. Mm. And you write these books and you blog and you have some info products. Mm-hmm. And then you do this big, audacious event in Portland every summer called World Domination Summit, which I've been to twice, and I love it. I think it's a great event. But I mean, like, and I remember you telling me, well, that's how I make my money. It was like, there's no big secret here. Yeah, you know, I make my money through writing, through helping people, through bringing people together. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said for that. And that goes perfectly, you know, from the U Inc. into this building, you know, a community and all the rest of it. How many people, let's try and put this into context. Sure. How many people visit your blog on a monthly basis? Do you know now roughly?
Yeah. I mean, I used to check. I don't actually, I'm terrible with metrics and measurement. I mean, the last time I checked, it was something like 500,000, you know, unique visitors, which all these things are relative, right? Like, I mean, some people have like millions and millions and millions and millions, and some people have like a small number. So I don't know. I'm not really obsessed with that kind of thing.
But I'm just curious to know, though, because I mean, obviously, your books have done incredibly well. You know, you are, you know, you don't speak anywhere near as much as I'd like you to. You know, I mean, I think you should start speaking more, Chris.
Well, we'll see. Like you beat my hard thing about speaking, Chris, is my, you know, my message is kind of about empowerment and freedom and independence. So not a lot of corporations, you know, want to pay me.
I was going
to
say,
you know, to come. It's actually come up a couple of different times when a corporation has asked me if I come, and they kind of like they always ask the same thing. Well, are you going to tell people to leave? You know, and it's funny, but yeah.
No, I've had similar situations, obviously, with virtual freedom and the whole outsourcing VA stuff, because you know people won't. The big corporations won't hire me to come speak. You know, but I, you know, the reason why I bring this up is because I mean. I think you're great on stage, and I think you have an incredible kind of aura around you. People know that you're very, very genuine when you talk, and I'd love to be able to see you live more frequently as I bounce around. But let's talk about the importance of that as an element, and you know, for spreading your word and the work that you do, and how you build the community up, and obviously with the event itself as well. I mean, surely World Domination Summit is the big thing every year for you.
I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into WDS. I mean, as you know, there's thousands of people that come, and we actually run that as a not-for-profit. So I don't take any salary or income from it.
Correct.
But it's still, it's a labor of love. I would never say I don't take any value from it, because it's a wonderful experience that I feel very fortunate to be part of. It definitely takes a lot of time. The book tour, like I'm embarking on now, essentially, it definitely takes a lot of time. And I think I look at these things a little bit different from some people, because yes, I can go to like a, you know, mid-sized city in middle America or something, and there's 100 people there, and it'll take a day to travel there, and, you know, half a day to travel somewhere else. And I could probably use that time, you know, online to reach a lot more people or something, but I guess I'm interested in the long game. You know,
sure.
And you know, my first book came out 5 or 6 years ago. And there's people that I connected with on that very first book tour that are still, you know, part of the community today. And I think it meant something to them that I went to wherever their town was. If it didn't to them, it did to me. You know, and
for sure,
that's kind of why I do it. It's not like a slog. It's something that that I actually enjoy.
One thing that a lot of people that are in the Upreneur community are interested in currently, in terms of one particular revenue model, is the membership site, or that recurring, you know, kind of take on creating something, whether it's based on authority or software or whatever. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that in regards to? Like, I mean, you could open one tomorrow and make a buttload of money with the community.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think there's a big saturation now of a lot of people. You know. A lot of people, everybody has a course, everybody has a product, and it's not that they're all bad. I mean, the problem is actually that a lot of them are good. You know, the problem is that like what makes so-and-so's course better than somebody else's, because, you know, a lot of people are actually teaching good things. I mean, I have one membership site that I started a few years ago called the Travel Hacking Cartel that helps people earn frequent flyer miles and travel the world. So I started that myself, and now there's two partners in it that actually do more of the work than I do. So I do have that. I think it's if you have the community and if you have the specific, you know, the specific promise, I think makes a big difference for a membership site. I tend to think unless you have like a major, major community, the more unique and specific the promise, the better, as opposed to just like here, join my tribe, you know, and we'll hang out. I think that can work for some people, but only a few people, basically. But for everybody who has like a skill that they really tried to develop and like has really honed it, like Benny Hsu or somebody else, and they can create something specific, then it has tremendous potential. And obviously recurring revenue is better than any other kind of revenue because you can count on it.
What would you say to people that are just really kind of focusing on building their communities, and they're not really communities, they're just lists, they're just doing all these Facebook ads, you know, that, oh, I've got, you know, 70,000 people in my community. It's just a list, buddy. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I'm pretty sure.
What's your take on that?
I guess what I would say to them is I'm pretty sure you can actually go online tomorrow and, you know, spend a pretty small amount of money and buy a list, you know, of 100,000 people or 1 million people or whatever. And then technically you're going to have a list. You could say that I have this X number of people, right? But obviously, most of us would say, well, you know, that's kind of, well, first of all, it's fraudulent. But second of all, like, do those people know you? Do you have any relationship with them? Like, why, you know, how did this come about? You could also kind of, you know, bribe people onto your, there's all kinds of ways you could get people on the list. But as you said, a list is not a community. You know, I'd much, much, much rather have a very small list, you know, our community or whatever, of people who are there for a reason and, you know, have this connection. I know a lot of people with, you know, very small lists. You know, if you look at their Twitter or their Facebook, it's not huge numbers at all. And they're earning a really good living, good income. And you probably do too, because they have focused on meeting a need, providing a solution and building relationships with those people over time. So, you know, ultimately, like, I think we've always kind of said quality matters more than quantity, but I don't know that we've always believed it, you know, and by we, I mean, like people in this industry, like myself, other so-called experts, like we always say that, but I feel like now more than ever, it's especially true.
I agree 100%. I mean, we actually had it with this show. The last quarter of 2015, I decided to ramp it up to 2 shows a week because I thought that, you know, people wanted it. And our numbers, yes, they spiked a little bit, but they didn't grow all that much. And so I cut right back and I ended up refocusing on a weekly show again. Great. Because I do believe that the quality is important, more so than the quantity.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
To wrap up here, a couple of quick things. Sure. And this really is for the travel peeps that are tuning as well, because I know a lot of people travel on business and whatnot as well. Indulge me here for a minute, Mr.
Okay.
Number one, best airline lounge in the world, according to Chris.
Okay.
Go.
Best airline lounge in the world would actually be an exclusive airline terminal in Frankfurt, and that would be the Lufthansa first class terminal. So you can actually go, if you're flying first class out of Frankfurt on Lufthansa, a completely separate entrance, private security, you know, everything. There's a full restaurant in there. You're never presented with the bill, complete bar service, shower, a bathtub. You can get a complimentary rubber ducky that you then take home. So I obviously have 3 of them in my bathtub.
That's good to know.
It's an aspirational goal. There you go.
There you go. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I don't go around Europe all that much.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm via Hong Kong for everything.
All
so
right.
Obviously Cathay Pacific with Marco Polo, the lounges there are gorgeous.
Yep. They have a new first class lounge in Hong Kong. That's great. I was actually recently there. So I fly Cathay all the time.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff. Okay. So that's the thing. So I was going to say then also my follow-up question to this personal international airline of choice.
Okay, so obviously it's going to depend on routing and such, but if I'm just saying, generally speaking, I would put Cathay near the top. Cathay, Etihad, maybe. I've been flying Etihad more recently. I like them. Qatar Airways is good, and Singapore. So obviously I'm not naming any American airline. I'm not naming any European airline. It's basically all Asia or the Gulf.
We've got three of those are my faves as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's something to be said. I think when you do fly international, and particularly when you start either spending money or you start travel hacking and using your points and everything on business and first, you want what you're paying for.
Absolutely.
In one way, shape, or form, you know? Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap this up with one final question then, because I know you got to go. For anybody right now that might be struggling, Chris, and might be sitting squarely at this intersection of, you know, money and joy and you know, everything else that's going on, that you obviously go into great deep detail inside of Born for This, what advice have you got them, other than obviously pick up the book, because they're going to do that, because I'm telling them to, but other than that, what advice have you got for somebody who might be at that intersection right now, who's trying to figure things out?
I would tell them to not worry about what's happened in the past. I would tell them that there's probably more than one path. There's probably more than one road to success, you know, to finding that thing they were born to do. And I think the only way they will find it is through experimentation, through being willing to take some careful risks, not necessarily to go bankrupt, you know, right away, but to start something. And I mean, the only way they will get out of that situation of feeling stuck is going to be to try something new. And so I would encourage them to think, what can I do now toward that goal? You know, how can I then make choices? Let's think about that framework, joy, money, flow. If I've got 2 different options, you know, to choose from, which option is going to get me closer to that intersection? Which option is going to get me closer to, you know, something I love, something that makes money, and something that I'm good at? So that's what I would encourage them to do. And just, you know, eyes on the prize, keep moving forward.
Wise words. Wise words. I love it. It's been great to be able to sort of sit down and have a catch up. And it's even better, obviously, that I'd be able to deliver it to my peeps here at the same time.
I really appreciate that, Chris. Thank you so much. You have such a great community. So hopefully I'll get to meet many of them on the tour or maybe sometime in the Philippines or somewhere else.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about all those things. So good luck with everything. I sincerely hope this is another rip-roaring, best-selling adventure for you.
Cheers, man. Thanks.
All right. Everybody, show notes for you. We're going to be linking over to the book and Chris's site and everything else that he does as well. chrisducker.com/episode167. I'll be back at you again next week with another episode of Youpreneur FM. Until then, take good care. Bye-bye for now.
If the idea of an entrepreneurial community where you get to learn from the best in the business, as well as rub shoulders, gain support, have access to immediate feedback, as well as nonstop accountability from your peers, is something that excites you, then visit youpreneur.com for more information and to get started on building a business you can truly be proud of today. That's youpreneur.com. We'll see you on the inside.